Welcome. It's another day, another week of Impractopia, and I thank you. Impractopia thanks you for coming back and being good listeners and good downloads to the podcast. Today we have a good show. Every show is good. Dr. Jerome Tilak Singh is my guest, and we're talking about West Indian or Caribbean. Whole dialogue about what people refer to themselves down in the region. We also have Did You Know? Caribbean Nobel Laureates. We'll end the show with Ode to the Caribbean, good quote for you, and of course the announcement of next week's guest. But before we get going, guess what? We have some announcements. Biggest announcement is that Impractopia, the website, has got a facelift. It's lighter, brighter, so much easier to move around and see what's happening, more interactive. We've activated the comment block. We'd really like for you to leave comments, and I will read them on the show and also post to the website your comments. The Impractopian blog is up and running. Every week I will post an article, a write-up, my feelings, my views on what we present to you as our feature on the podcast. Also, please send us emails, info@impractopia.com. I'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions, people you know who are doing wonderful things in the region, or even you, we'd love to have you. Also, we have the subscribe to Impractopia widget up on the website. All you have to do is enter your email, so you'll be first to know when the podcast is up, when a new blog is posted, and when we have freebies to say thank you to you for being a loyal listener and somebody who recommends Impractopia. So I know you can do it. We're doing a lot to improve on the quality of the podcast and also the quality of the offerings that we have on the website. So I'm very encouraged by you just listening and participating, and we will do our best to bring you the best quality product that you hear and also see. Okay? So I know you can do that. Go ahead and do it. Also, don't forget, you can download the show on iTunes, on Stitcher, and also on SoundCloud. And, of course, you can write a review. Reviews are good. And once you start doing that, we will read them on the show. Okay? So I know you can do that. And let's get the show on the road. Time now for Did You Know? Caribbean Nobel Laureates. St. John Pierce was a poet and diplomat, born in 1887 in Saint-Léger-des-Feuillets, Guadeloupe. He was part of the French Foreign Ministry and also a consultant on French literature in the American Library of Congress. His works include the long poem Anabas, 1924, Exile, 1942, Pluie, 1944, Amer, 1957, and Chronique, 1960. He received the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1960. Sir William Arthur Lewis, born 1915 in Castries, St. Lucia, won a Nobel Prize in 1979 for pioneering research on economic development in emerging countries. A professor emeritus of political economy at Princeton, he taught undergraduate and graduate courses in economic development and modern economic history. He published a book, The Theory of Economic Growth, in 1954, that is regarded as a seminal study in the field. In 1963, he was knighted by Queen Elizabeth. He also headed the Caribbean Development Bank and has the Sir Arthur Lewis Community College in St. Lucia carrying his name. Derek Alton Walcott, born 1930, was a St. Lucian poet and playwright. Described as the Caribbean community's greatest poet, playwright, and theatrical director, Dr. Walcott received the coveted Nobel Prize for Literature in 1992, generating much pride among his fellow Caribbean citizens.
His literary works are well known and read internationally, including Omeros and Dream on Monkey Mountain. And his plays have been performed on many international stages. Dr. Walcott has received several awards for poetry and literature, including the Guinness Award for Poetry, the Royal Society of Literature Award, and Britain's W.H. Smith Literary Prize. Vidyadhar Suraj Prasad Naipaul, also known as V.S. Naipaul, was born in 1932 in Chaguanas, Trinidad, in a family descended from immigrants from the north of India. Naipaul's works consist mainly of novels and short stories, but also include some that are documentary. V.S. Naipaul has been awarded a number of literary prizes, among them the Booker Prize in 1971 and the T.S. Eliot Award for Creative Writing in 1986. He is an honorary doctor of St. Andrew's College and Columbia University and of the universities of Cambridge, London, and Oxford. In 1989, he received the Trinity Cross, Trinidad and Tobago's highest national award, and in 1990, he was knighted by Queen Elizabeth. He received the Nobel Prize for Literature in 2001. His works include A House for Mr. Biswas, A Bend in the River, and The Enigma of Arrival. And there you have it. 4 Nobel laureates from the Caribbean since the award was first handed out in Sweden in 1901. And now, my chat with Dr. Jerome Tilak Singh on West Indian or Caribbean and so much more. I'm just happy that we're able to talk about this thing that's been bugging me for so long. Are we West Indian or Caribbean? Do people in all of the Caribbean countries refer to themselves as West Indian? And I wanted to get your views on that as a historian.
I feel that the term has been changing. It's sometimes used interchangeably. And what I mean by that is that if I am in London or Canada and somebody should ask me where I am from, if it's a fellow West Indian, I would say Trinidad and Tobago. But if it's somebody who is of non-Caribbean descent, I would say I'm from the West Indies or I'm from the Caribbean. Now, what I've realized, the older folks, persons 40 years and more, 50 years and more, tend to use the term West Indian more. The younger people use Caribbean. You talk about Caribbean cuisine, Caribbean restaurants, Caribbean associations, right? Caribbean dances. So those two terms, West Indian and Caribbean, I feel that the term Caribbean is used more frequently by maybe the younger age group, you could say.
Yeah, you're right about that. When I was growing up, it was West Indies, West Indian, and it's used not so much more. We still have the West Indies cricket team. I hope they never change it to the Caribbean cricket team, because I think it makes us sound more exotic, more new, because the West Indies historically was the New World for Europeans. And I was just wondering if people like say from Bermuda or any ever refer to themselves as West Indians, because I think as people in the Eastern Caribbean, closer down to South America, in our history books, these were the countries referred to, the Greater Antilles, the Les Antilles, Cuba, Jamaica, coming down all the way down to Trinidad and maybe Guyana. But it's interesting, yeah, now it's more Caribbean is a newer way to refer to our part of the world.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah? And a lot of people that I've spoken to from other Caribbean islands, they use the term very interchangeably, right? They will talk about, you know, West Indian dishes or the West Indian language, you know, or even the music. So they often use it interchangeably. And I agree with you, the cricket team still has that title, the West Indian cricket team.
Mm-hmm. Historically, we have the English, French, and Dutch West Indies or Caribbean now. Do you think more modern thinking about where we're from, how has that impacted us historically or going back in terms of making the Caribbean what it is today?
I feel it is important, particularly when we're trying to determine the identity of people. And what I mean by that, somebody from maybe Cuba who migrated to Panama, maybe to work on the Panama Canal, will want to refer to themselves as coming from the Spanish West Indies. Somebody from Puerto Rico will have a problem because they are situated within the Caribbean, but they are part of United States. So they would want to further differentiate themselves, you know, as talking about geographically, they're from the Caribbean. I think this is where the problem lies, because as you know, you have the U.S. Virgin Islands still, you know, so we still have that problem where the United States still has a foothold, right? And even Britain still has a presence in some of the islands. So it's often difficult to refer to ourselves and say that we are from the English-speaking Caribbean or Dutch-speaking Caribbean, right? And we tend to just use the term loosely Caribbean. But I agree what you say is important that we know the language we speak, because that shows the European country that inhabited the island, right? Or the United States that inhabited the country, right? So it's a very important defining factor, mm-hmm. right? When we're trying to search for identity.
That's very interesting. I think when you talk about what makes up and identifying us as people from the Caribbean.
Yes. What I should also mention too is that because of not just migration patterns, but because of sometimes intermarriages, right? The accent is lost, the culture is lost. Sometimes somebody might migrate to England, or they might migrate to Africa or India, and they might spend many years there, and they lose these cultural ties. And the next generation often speaks as maybe British or American, you know? So this is where the problem of using accents and language could lie, where there's a transition period.
So do you think that's affecting, let's say, Caribbean culture? Because I think we're at that point where we're trying to identify ourselves as an entire region, not just one country, but we're talking about CARICOM, Caribbean unity. Is there going to be, or is there an issue or some kind of problem in terms of identifying us culturally? Because I think at the heart of it, there are a lot of things that we have in common that we can identify as a common culture.
I agree with you. That could pose a problem in the future. It's even posing a problem now, because something like Carnival might be unifying. In Trinidad Tobago, we have our Calypso too, and we have a lot of various types of music like Rapso and Gospelipso and Reggae. But all these various cultural fusions, it sometimes create a little problem in that other ethnic groups, mm-hmm. like maybe the Indo-Caribbean, might want more recognition for their culture. The Chinese, the Syrian, the Portuguese, all these persons have come into the Caribbean. So they have these people of Portuguese descent or Syrian descent, and they might say, why their music or their culture is not recognized. So this is the problem, where culture could be a unifying force in the region, but it could also create problems when governments have to assist all the groups equally.
You know what, I believe that the Caribbean is the next big thing for everything that's happening in the world. And now you bring up all of these smaller minority groups that are in the Caribbean, growing in numbers and trying to make a presence. I can see that. As you know, more developed countries already have those issues with smaller groups trying to find their place. The Caribbean is going to have that issue too. But do you think we are versed or placed to be able to handle those issues, or want to be able to handle those issues, so that we can keep the Caribbean strong as it is, as a wonderful place, and the way people outside of the region think of us as a wonderful region?
We could deal with it. We could try to make sure that these issues do not become divisive. But we have to be very careful that in doing that, we don't exclude the rest of the world. Because sometimes, like when tourists come down, some islands are geared towards tourism, like Barbados, St. Lucia, Antigua, Jamaica. But other islands and other countries might not be so tourist-oriented, and they might believe that, you know, these are outsiders. Like a few years ago, Tobago had a problem where they felt the Germans were buying land in Tobago, right? So this could create a problem where we are promoting the Caribbean in this global village, and we are becoming very tech-savvy, and we are in the 21st century. And it also creates a problem when outsiders come, and they might want to live, settle, spend some time. So I'm seeing a tension occurring within the region.
You know, you talked about technology. It's a case of where people are advancing quicker than the governmental systems are. So you have that issue where governments are trying to open up countries, invite people in. Locals are trying to embrace themselves, their talents, their abilities. The world that we live live in and also their countries, and you have that clash with governments trying to boost their countries and people advancing themselves and all of those things coming together, and that might be a bit of an issue.
And added to this complex issue is the fact that some Caribbean islands have become transshipment points for drug trafficking. So we have become stereotyped as a lot of Caribbean countries, and sometimes the embassies would issue warnings, you know. So it affects tourism, but it also makes the West Indians abroad look like they're always involved in something illegal. And I think we in the Caribbean need to deal with that crisis.
You're right. And not also that the drug trafficking, but money laundering. When offshore banking right. became a big thing for Caribbean countries as a means for employment for local people, economic exchange. And these two, I think, are the biggest issues that's affecting the Caribbean. I live in the States, and yeah, for one, people think once you're from the Caribbean, yeah, you get that good quality drug from the Caribbean. And then the other thing too is that when you listen to the news a lot, and even on programming, the Caribbean is that place where people say, oh, people can just hide their money so they don't have to pay their taxes. Right. So in as much as we the Caribbean is known for its beauty and all its natural goodness, and it's good hospitality, we have that side of it that's, I don't know if it's balanced, but it's giving us a bad rap too.
Yeah, and I think what could happen is that the Caribbean diaspora, the immigrants abroad, some of them need to return to assist, serving in certain positions, assisting financially, you know, to help rebuild the economy, but also to prevent issues like corruption becoming out of hand. Because corruption seems to be endemic throughout the world. It's global. And we in the Caribbean need to ensure that the money is used to help our people. So I think some of the Caribbean talent abroad, because during the last 25, 30 years, we have had a serious brain drain. And this is expected because many young people cannot get jobs. Some of my students are graduating with degrees, and they are forced to go abroad, right, to work and live. So that I think we need to try to tap into the Caribbean diaspora, people like yourselves, and see how we could strengthen, how we could improve the Caribbean economies and their culture.
It's so much easier for people to fit into a system that's already established, already developed. People can come to the States, they go to England, Canada, all of these more developed countries where they have established systems. And then, of course, there is the economic advantage in terms of the currency. So, you know, they come here, they go to Canada, they go to the UK, and, you know, they just find a spot to fit in. But giving back to the Caribbean, we need to be able to see that we are the ones who have to take the Caribbean to the next step, that we can get people in the region, out of the region, of Caribbean descent, or people who are interested in the development of the region, so that when we talk, we can find ways to contribute and advance the economies of the region.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I have been telling people I have met, Caribbean diaspora, that the region has issues like poverty, unemployment, we have racism, religious discrimination, crime, and we need to try to create a think tank, we need to try to create some sort of global forum where we could tap, because the Caribbean diaspora is spread far and wide, China, Australia, Argentina. And we need to find out how we could share ideas, how we could find out, like maybe you're in the United States, how does the United States deal with unemployment or crime? And maybe share these ideas with countries
exactly,
in the Caribbean.
Exactly. And, you know, on its own, governments may be a lot slower in doing that. And individuals on their own can, with just talking and asking questions and having people in the region who are willing to listen. Sometimes governments are really hard to break through. But once we get those ideas out, individuals outside of the region, within the region, start thinking, and then we can do what needs to be done to achieve where we want our countries to get to.
I agree with you, because there are many NGOs and community-based organizations in Trinidad and Tobago and the rest of the Caribbean that need financial assistance, and sometimes they fall through the cracks, and the government sometimes don't give them sufficient funding. And I know a lot of the West Indians, particularly like maybe in Europe, where the pound or the euro is so strong, it wouldn't take much for them to send down a barrel with clothes. clothes or send out medicines or food or so, you know, because a lot of times we only focus on countries that suffer maybe from a natural disaster like Haiti, and then we forget about that Caribbean country. Now, after a few months, the world forgot about Haiti. So we need to prevent that short-term mentality, that short-term memory we have, where we just help a country that went through flooding or earthquake, and then we move on.
You know what, I think probably the right term for that is that grassroots effort, always on the ground, keeping the message alive. And even local charities and so need to start expanding their reach and in what they're asking for. Right. Like you said, a barrel. If you it's making connections. You connect with a Trinidad organization in New York, in Atlanta, and wherever your people are, you make that connection and say, hey, reach out to your people in America, because the reality is that even West Indians in America may not understand the importance of giving back to where they came from. So, you know, not necessarily in cash, but a lot of stuff in kind. I know in St. Lucia around Christmas time, the government relaxes on all taxes on barrels coming in. That's what we need to do. Advertise ourselves globally and keep that grassroots effort alive. And I think these are the things that we need to do. And once we start talking about how we can do those things, I think the Caribbean, the West Indies, however we want to call it, can be a lot more successful quicker. Yeah.
And I think we need to see how we could make the Caribbean a village that is close-knit, a village where we could look out for each other, where each Caribbean country could rely on the assistance without relying so much on foreign help, without relying maybe on the IMF to help us. You know, so we need in the Caribbean a more rebuilding within the Caribbean. The community is fragmented. Eh? We still have sometimes that inter-island jealousy. We still sometimes believe that one island is wealthier because they have oil or natural gas or bauxite. And I always tell people, I say, I'm very proud when somebody from the Caribbean wins an Olympic medal or achieves something like something outstanding, like the winner Nobel Prize or so. So we need to understand how sometimes we need to be get in touch with what it really means to be Caribbean.
You know, you're right about that. We've been promoting this one Caribbean as far back as the 1950s. And I think people individually and in smaller groups are beginning to embrace that. We're using the word Caribbean to identify the region, even though maybe sometimes the objective might still be subjective. But you're right. Once we begin to move away from this one island, this and that, and embrace an entire region, and we can embrace people from, say, we're one country, but we're from different states, the United States of the Caribbean. Yeah. We start to think that way. Then I think what you're talking about, this entire one Caribbean unity thing and identifying that can really happen.
Yeah, because I have noticed that sometimes the Caribbean countries, they are quick to sign agreements with developed countries or with Latin American countries. And we need to have unity first before we try to create linkages with other countries. You know, and I think this is where the irony is, you know, where we would want to sign a security agreement with the United States, but our Latin American neighbors, like Venezuela and thing, we still ignore
them. Yeah, you're right. And geographically, it's more advantageous if we just work with what's closest to us, and they have more in common on a lot of levels than further countries. But I think it's this whole thing about if you're more developed, you have more, so then we need to go to those who have more, as opposed to those who have just as much as we do. But if we put what we have, the little that we have, we can gain a lot more from it.
Yes, correct. I feel also now is a good time to push this unity concept, because there's no longer the divisiveness of ideology. As you know, communists was big in Cuba, the communism, and Grenada had it a bit, and Jamaica, right? Socialism, communism, even Guyana. And now that ideology is considered a remnant of the 20th century, we now have an opportunity to build those bonds. Because what I've been trying to tell people is that, you see, we started up discussion talking about West Indian and Caribbean. I was telling people that we need to start using the term Caribbean Empire. Just as we will talk about the British Empire or the American Empire, we need to start seeing the Caribbean region as the Caribbean Empire, because we have spread out throughout the world. We have a lot of potential. We have a lot of talent here and human resources. We are bound. And I feel we need to start seeing ourselves not just as small islands or small countries, you know, but we need to see ourselves as a Caribbean Empire.
That you should put, is that in writing, Jerome? Is that written down somewhere in a book, in an e-book or something?
Yeah, I need to do that, because an icon like Bob Marley, he's recognized globally. You know, his music sung by all various races and religions, they know the lyrics. And I feel, you know, we need to be proud of these icons from each country. Like Derek Walcott, right? He's well known. And in the economic sphere, we have somebody like Arthur Lewis, right? So these persons have made their mark on the global stage. And we need to know now that they have opened doors, they have paved the way for us, and we need to continue these high performances and this quality
achievement. And people who have left the region who are making their mark in science, in technology, in medicine, in politics in other countries, yeah, they need to throw some of that back to the region so that more people from the Caribbean can do that. You're learning something new every week, right? I know it. I will definitely have him back on the show because he has such an extensive resume. Things that I didn't even know was happening in the Caribbean, he knows about. So we'll definitely have him back on in the near future. Now we have our Ode to the Caribbean quote by Jeffrey Philp, and he says, Caribbean means being part of one of the most interesting, though unintended, social experiments in the world. Within this archipelago, we have people from all over the planet meeting and trying to live together without resorting to genocide. Wow, that's a lot to take in, but so true about the Caribbean. Anyway, that's our show for this week. Next week, we have Ryan Van Denabeel, also known as Rum Shop Ryan. You have to come around next week for that. It'll be fun. And don't forget to visit the website www.impractopia.com. Write a comment, subscribe to 4-hour updates, download the podcast, write a review. That's stuff I know you can do in your sleep, but don't do it while you're asleep, okay? And I will see you next time. My name is Kim Jean, right here in Practopia.